Hi everyone, welcome to another week of The Linsider. This week I am switching things up a little bit. Last month, I had the pleasure to be a speaker on a workshop put on by the Harvard Crimson Global Essay Competition. The essay competition brings together from around the world high school students with a passion for or interest in writing. I spoke on a workshop with a Emmy Award-winning writer, Eli Addy, who is well known for his work on The West Wing and House. I asked them if I could use the discussion we had, because the discussion was talking about storytelling in television and film. And I thought that the conversation could be interesting for listeners of the Linsider podcast, as we discussed how storytelling comes to life from idea, and how writers and producers get involved, and how it works on both the television and film side. Our audience was high school students, but I think you'll find a lot of this discussion quite interesting. So I hope you like it. Let me know your thoughts. This I'm classifying as a bonus episode of the podcast because it is not content I created for the Linsider. It is a discussion workshop put on by the Harvard Crimson Global Essay Competition, and I was a guest on it, and I've asked them and Eli Addy if I could feature it here on the Linsider. Before we get to the workshop conversation, I wanted to share with you a podcast I came across this week that I thought would be of interest. On this podcast, we discussed the entertainment industry from a cross-cultural and interdisciplinary perspective. I'm always on the lookout for new ideas, interesting ideas that take what there is in entertainment and content and storytelling, but also find where things are going, how things are changing with the influence of technology, what is possible going forward, and also new business models or new financing methods. This week, I came across a podcast conversation from a podcast called Founders Field Guide. It is available on a website, joincolossus.com. The episode features Trevor McFreedies and it's titled Building Web 3.0. And what is Web 3.0? So the description of this podcast episode is Trevor McFreedy is a founder of technology startup Brood and the creator of virtual pop star Michaela, a Gen Z icon with millions of fans worldwide. We cover the musical industry complex, the creation of Michaela, and what Web 3.0 will mean for creators and builders. I just thought it was really fascinating because it talks about how Trevor created the virtual pop star Michaela, why he created Michaela, the character and personality and white space that he thought should exist for Michaela, and how he built up an audience. Just looking at Instagram, Michaela has over 3 million followers. That's huge. And what he's doing with Michaela, I think you'll find it very interesting, and I think you'll really appreciate and learn from his perspectives as he talks about Web 3.0 and what that means for creators. So I have the link in the show notes to both this interview podcast and also to Michaela's Instagram account. Please take a look if you are interested. If you like this podcast, please stay tuned. I am going to be releasing new episodes every Thursday. I believe you will be enjoying the next 4 guests that I have. I have them already booked, and we are recording those episodes soon. Please rate review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcast, or whatever your favorite podcast app is. Please also find the podcast on social media, whether that is Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or other. You'll just have to look up The Linsider or The Linsider Podcast. And without further ado, let's go ahead and listen to the discussion I had with Eli Addy for the Harvard Crimson Global Essay Competition. Thanks, and see you next week.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for coming. Awesome to see so many people here. We're just going to wait a couple more minutes to make sure that everyone is in the room, and then we'll jump straight into it. Awesome. So it looks like we're holding steady. So let's get started. Thanks everyone for coming again. It's super exciting to see everyone here and so close to the essay submission deadline. So I hope everyone's essay writing is going well and smoothly. And you guys can definitely, you know, pick up some tips and tricks from the panelists today. So as always, we'll be starting with some polls. The first poll, which will seem familiar, is just where are you tuning in from? This is super helpful for our own records, and also just always really great to see where you guys are from and how global the competition really is. Central and South America is so good. They're always so good, but it's really great to see, you know, how large and extended the family is. As a reminder, the submissions are closing for essay submission tonight at 11:59 Eastern time. Oh, sorry, not tonight. Sunday, March 28th at 11:59 Eastern time. So just make sure that you get those in on time, which kind of leads into our second poll, which is that the submission links have been sent out to your emails. So poll two, which should be dropping soon, is just have you guys received your submission links? This is super important to make sure that you guys can get your essays in and we can read your awesome work. So if you're having any problems with that, definitely check your inbox and then reach out to us for help if you can't find it. Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Like again, it looks like mostly everyone has it. So that's really great. If you don't have it, make sure to check your inbox, look in the, you know, junk or spam folders and like search for info@essaycomp.org. And then if you can't find it, then definitely email us and then we can help you out. And that's pretty much it. As a reminder, please drop your questions in the Q&A channel and not the chat. And feel free to upvote the questions that you think are interesting, because then they'll float to the top and then I'll try my best to ask those questions. We won't be answering questions that are in the chat. So just as a reminder to everyone. Awesome. So as a quick introduction, my name is Chelsea. I'm a first year at Harvard College and also a senior associate at the Harvard Crimson. I'm super excited to be here hosting the panel and just getting the chance to talk to Eli and Jason, who are just two really cool people. So just to get started, could you guys introduce yourselves so that everyone knows who you are?
Hi, I'm Eli. I guess I'll go first. I'm Harvard College grad and worked on the Crimson and have done all kinds of writing, really. I was a political speech writer for a bunch of years and then got into TV writing for a number of shows, including West Wing and House, the medical drama, and now Billions on Showtime, and can talk about any kind of writing anybody wants to talk about.
Super cool. Hi, everyone. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me. My name is Jason Lin. And I'm not a writer, but I work with writers. I'm a film producer. I recently started my own company called Story Arch Pictures. Previously, I was an executive at Alibaba Pictures. I got my career in the industry working with Jet Li on a number of his films. And I'm originally from Taiwan. I came to the US when I was a little kid and I grew up in California. And now I live in LA working with writers, directors, and at making stories. My focus is on stories that are cross-cultural and that have at least one Asian lead.
Awesome. So just to kind of summarize what the event is about, I was thinking we could do kind of half career for people who are interested in hearing about you guys and your journeys and maybe exploring kind of like going into the writing field or entertainment field, and then also some writing advice because our competitors are currently working on their essays, their submissions, and I think it would be really great to hear, you know, from the perspective of either a writer or like someone who's involved in, you know, choosing films or like producing them, what you guys find interesting. So maybe to start off, could you guys walk us through like what a typical day in your life looks like?
Boy, I'll say for me, there really isn't a typical day. It's probably true for Jason too. You know, I have done a number of different things in my sort of Hollywood career, but primarily what I've done is I've been a writer and producer on TV shows, you know, and sometimes for as long as, you know, 5 years on a particular show. And so you do a lot of things. You write scripts, but usually they begin in what we call a writer's room, where, you know, if a typical TV show has like 8 or 10 writers, we'll all sit around a conference table and we'll bat around ideas and brainstorm and joke around with each other, which sometimes makes it into the show as well, and try to figure out what we want the characters to do, what, you know, plot ideas we have for the show. And then after weeks of that, you know, break it into episodes that an individual writer will go off and write. But, you know, as a TV writer, one of the reasons I became focused on television as opposed to features like Jason, and I've dabbled a tiny bit in features, is that in television, the writers are also producers. And that means that you get involved in, if you've written an episode of television, you get involved in casting that episode and pre-production, and you're in rehearsals with the actors. And very often the directors in television come in as guests for a few weeks, and the writer is the person who knows the set and knows the show and knows the actors better. So you end up having a pretty strong role in the way that it gets made. So all of that is a short version of saying, or long version rather, of saying you can do a million things. You can be in story meetings. You can be typing at home at your computer. You can be on a drafty soundstage with actors asking you, what does this scene even mean? So you can do a lot of different things. At the moment, because of the pandemic, I'm working on a TV show that is based in New York. And all I do is I participate remotely in brainstorming and writing material. So there's no typical day. My wife wishes there was a typical day, but one of the things I like about it is it's fun, it's creative, it's varied, and you never really know what a day is going to be like, you know, too far in advance.
Yeah, just like Eli, I would echo similar sentiments, I would say, but I can bucket it into certain things. You know, there are things that I need to do. For example, a lot of times if I'm just looking for a story or developing an idea, I'm reading a lot. I'm reading scripts, or maybe I need to get to know new writers or read some submissions that writers have sent to me. So I'm reading a lot. Sometimes if something strikes me and I'm looking for research and I've decided I'm going to go after a certain project, I need to understand it better. And maybe it's based on history. Maybe it's based on a person. So I'll do a lot of that. Then there are things that are communication and administrative, you know, and in that manner. And sometimes I have help on that. Sometimes I don't. Then there are meetings. So I need to meet with folks. I need to communicate with them, whether it's writers, and I need to figure out who they are if I'm getting to know them, or if I know them well, there's a certain topic and we have to figure out, oh, maybe there's these things with the script that we're working on, these things that we need to address. And then how do we plan for the next step? So I would say it is pretty unexpected. Like yesterday I had a whole plan and then there was an emergency. Something happened in the world. And I had to respond to that. And so my day was kind of blown up. So things like that happen. But I would say there's ways you can structure that. So there are certain jobs or certain ways you can do in this industry that are more, yes, you figure out how they are. And also some jobs inherently, even in writing, they can be very different. And then if you get certain jobs, they can be more structured. So I would say there's a very wide variety. Hopefully that helps.
That's really interesting to hear, you know, how like varied and different your guys' days are, or weeks even, which I guess leads me to my next question is like, did you always know that you were interested in going down this path? Or, you know, like when did you guys get started and like become interested in writing or entertainment? And when did you begin to think about it as a career?
I feel like I shouldn't always monopolize the first answer. Maybe I'll let
you start. Sure, I'll go first. I would say for me, I started thinking about it in college, but I didn't know. But I guessed, like I was dreaming. I wrote my college essay that I wanted to be a film producer. But the reason why I was like, I didn't know what that meant. I was just like, I think that's what I want to do, because what I found missing was there was a blank space to me in the world of storytelling. I wanted to see more films in the English language, or at least in the US, that better reflected my culture. So my Chinese or Asian or cross-cultural background. I wanted to see more of those stories. So that's always been a goal of mine. I didn't know how to do that. And then so really early on in my career, and I think you could say even like right now, because technology and entertainment is changing so much, I keep trying to figure out how that is, like how I can bring these stories to life.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say that I'm jealous of Jason for knowing at such a tender young age that I never had any idea. And sometimes I feel like I still have no idea what I want to do when I grow up. I not because it was any sort of chosen career path, but I kind of stumbled into working in politics and government after I graduated from Harvard. And I worked in New York City government, and then I worked in Washington. And the last job I had in Washington was I was Al Gore's main speechwriter when he was vice president in the White House, and also as he ran for president in the year 2000, which famously ended with a bitterly contested recount in the state of Florida, and which didn't go our way. And Gore was not certified as the president, as everybody probably knows on this Zoom. And I had no career plan. I had been a speechwriter. I didn't really consider myself a writer. I never had any Hollywood aspirations. But two close friends of mine from Harvard, actually, who both were Harvard Lampoon people, were working on TV shows in LA. So I knew that TV shows had teams of people that wrote them. And the TV show The West Wing, which some of you may know, it's been off the air for a long time now. It had been on the air for a year and a half, and I'd barely seen it. But somebody made a joke to me about, you know, as the recount was ending, you should move to LA and go work on The West Wing. And I thought, maybe I should do something totally different with my life. And there was a TV show that I then watched a couple episodes of on the air and thought, this is kind of about what I did. And maybe they'd be interested in somebody who actually did it. They had many people who had. I didn't know that at the time. So I just randomly reached out to the show and the guy who ran the show, kind of as a joke, kind of on a flyer. And they were interested. And I flew out and I met with the guy who had created the show. And I think on a lark, he hired me. So in my case, it was completely random. But what maybe wasn't random, for anybody who's interested on this call in a career telling stories, as Jason does too, I did something in the real world for a bunch of years. And then I wrote about that thing. I had worked in the White House. I'd worked on a presidential campaign. And then I found myself in the middle of a TV show about working in the White House. And it was a therapy session, but it was also a writing lesson, because all I was doing was sort of expressing my truths about that experience and sometimes changing the endings to make them happier endings, to be honest. But it's a lesson, because when people come to me now and they say, I want to be a screenwriter, or how do you become a writer? I always say, get as much experience as you can doing other things. There's a great genre of movie that we all know well, which is like the movie Swingers, say. It's about young people in Hollywood who want to work in Hollywood, who hang out in coffee shops and complain about how they can't get jobs in Hollywood. That's if all you do when you graduate from college is come to Hollywood, then that'll be the only thing you'll really have to write about. And there's only so many movies they can make about that. So I always say to people, if you want to be creative in general, have as much experience as you can. Meet as many real people as you can. Volunteer, take jobs, work on campaigns, work in a hospital. It'll all feed its way back into your work, I think.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And it's pretty reminiscent of something one of our last panelists said when I asked her like how she comes up with the inspiration for her stories. She was like, she talked about like the importance of noticing things and observing things and how that like ties into her writing. I don't know, like Jason, do you have any advice about like where you find inspiration for the stories that you want to tell?
I mean, I was nodding a lot to what Eli said, because I agree with all that. It's like, you have to be curious and, you know, talk to people and get to know people. And for me, I think I had this certain idea and then I tested that. As like, is it this way? Or how do I do it better? And is there another way to do it? And so I would say, kind of know yourself and what you like. And like Eli said, build a expertise or a domain somewhere, but then be really open-minded and be curious and ask people. So for me, what that was, you know, I had this interest in showing Asian culture more in the mainstream. And for me, when I was in my mid-20s, I moved to China. I got a job working for Jet Li. I'd never been to China, but I was like, hey, I get a job working for Jet Li. How bad could that be? And it turned out to be a wild adventure. And I gained this whole other perspective of the world that I would not have, because not only was it in China, but because it was Jet Li, I got to travel the world and really see how movies are done in Europe, how movies are made in the US, how movies are made in Asia. And that really opened up my eyes. And so that would be kind of my suggestion. And there's no need to copy that, but just take kind of like the big overall kind of perspective of that thought.
Yeah, definitely. And that actually was a question I was going to ask you about more of the writing process, but you mentioned it. So like, what did you find about like the differences in producing in like Europe or China or anywhere else? Like, do you think there's different approaches that you take for appealing to different audiences?
That's a great question. I think, yeah, the worldwide audiences, they definitely have, I would say, different flavors. And so maybe one flavor will work somewhere, but that won't somewhere else. But I would say there's both similarities and differences. So it depends on the story and depends on the film. Some stories, you know, maybe if it's they may not work everywhere. They may only work in a certain area. For example, if it's a very American type of college comedy. But some movies and some stories are very universal, right? Like you see a movie like Coco, the Pixar movie. That movie is very steeped in Mexican culture and traditions, but that's a movie that worked really everywhere. So I think it depends. And I think one thing to think about is what is the goals and expectations? Every story is different. But if you want stories to work all around the world, I think what it is you have to find what is the universal, more human emotions and similarities among people all around the world and what really connects us.
Yeah, for sure. So maybe one of the most like the biggest writing related questions I had was, what do you guys think are the most like important aspects of a compelling and engaging story? I don't know, Eli, if you want to start with that.
Yeah, you know, I want to piggyback on something Jason said, because obviously everything you do has a particular audience, right? If you're working on a premium cable drama in the United States, you want to be dark and edgy, and it's more of an adult audience. If you're doing a Pixar movie, you want it to be broad and appeal to the biggest number of people in the biggest age range possible to some degree. But, you know, I think one of the, you know, to be universal, it's also very important, I think, to be specific, which is to say it's in the tiny little nuances of people's lives and even quirky details that people may all do differently. How you wake up and make your coffee, how you brush your teeth. Little quirks of individuals are often the things that we hook onto and relate to and that make characters have a universal appeal. So I think there's a mistake that some writers sometimes make in trying to be universal. They just make everything generic and kind of plain Jane. And I think the way to reach out to the biggest number of people, oddly, is in the nuance and in the detail. And you know, Chelsea, to also refer back to what your previous guest said, I think that, you know, writing is, I think, a craft more than an art. It's something you can learn. You know, if you read a lot of great scripts, if you do it a lot, you can pick up a lot of great tricks about how to write. If you're a screenwriter, how to write scenes, how to introduce characters, how to get people's attention. But I think being an observer is something that some people just have it, whether they're writers or not. Are you the kind of person who, when somebody walks in a room, you're noticing the shoes they wear, you're noticing their speech patterns? You can tune yourself to those things. But I think the more you can notice details in the world, the more you can even notice details about yourself. And just be aware of how you function that might be different or, you know, quirky or unique. I think that that helps. So, you know, to answer your question, I think to be interesting, there are a lot of ways to be interesting. You can be interesting with a giant car chase and having a building explode. You know, that can be pretty interesting. but you can also be interesting just in opening a window into somebody's peculiarities, somebody's quirks, what makes an individual tick. And that's often what people want to see. It's the, I think, the rare movie that people are just there to see the car chase. There are movies like that, but even in a car chase movie, who are you following? Who are you rooting for? Who do you care about? So that 20, 30 minutes in, you want to stay in your seat, or you don't want to change the channel, you know, if you're watching at home. And to me, it all comes down to those little details. And one more thing, which is something we talk about a lot, you know, and I'm sure Jason talks about it 50 times a day as writers, which is, you might refer to it as intention and obstacle. Somebody has to want something, and there has to be an obstacle in the way of their getting it. That's what a dramatic story is. It's basically, I want to wrestle the gun out of your hands. You don't want me to get the gun. And if in every scene and in every moment, I don't have a goal and there isn't something in the way of me achieving that goal, you kind of don't have a story. So that's a way to think about this kind of work, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe to build on to that, I know you said you can kind of like tune or maybe train yourself to be more observant. Would you say you've always been like a good writer, or was it something you had to work at? And do you have any suggestions for the students on how they can improve their writing?
You know, I'll tell you, I think I've always been comfortable as a writer. I don't know if I would go so far as to say I've always been a good writer, because that's such a subjective, weird thing to say in a way about myself anyway. But I think when I was in school, when I was even in elementary school, I always felt comfortable if a class had papers and not tests. You know, like I just felt able to express myself on the page, which doesn't mean, you know, I always structured everything perfectly or made all the right arguments, but you know, writing sentences came easily to me and was something I felt comfortable with. You know, when I was a speechwriter, and I've dabbled in journalism and different things, mostly rock criticism, actually, you know, after college a little bit. But, you know, when I was a speechwriter, I would describe writing a speech as writing, right? You sit down and sometimes in 40 minutes, you bang out an argument that a politician is going to deliver. You know, here's why my Medicare plan is better than, you know, this other senator's Medicare plan. And I felt by the end of my time in Washington, pretty good at that. And so I thought when I came out to LA to become a television writer, that it would be a lot easier than it turned out to be. And this is why. Screenwriting, TV writing is about 15% of it. The rest of it is architecture and problem solving. And by that, I mean, you know, how do you dispense information? You want to be ahead of your audience, but you want to intrigue them, and you want them to be dying to catch up to you in just the right increments. So do I drop the audience into the middle of a situation and they have no idea what's going on? And how many scenes do I give them to catch up to that? Do I hint that the lead character has a secret, and then I tell you the secret after 10 minutes, 20 minutes, or an hour? And as Jason can tell you, these are things we debate about back and forth with our producers, with our fellow writers for months sometimes. And so I'm not a master of that. Every story has its own rules. Every story wants to be told a certain way, and you don't always get it right. I still write scripts and look at them and think, my God, I have to completely reapproach this, you know, because it may not work the way the last one worked, or the way something that somebody else liked of mine works. So, you know, I think being comfortable as a writer, being able to write quickly and easily and to rewrite and to not have writer's block. I never sit in front of a screen and think, there are no words here. I don't know what to say. But so much of, you know, screenwriting is what piece of information comes where, you know, how slowly, you know, what's the flow and the pace and the tone. And I wish more of it was just writing. It would be a lot easier of a job.
Yeah, that that sounds like a lot. Going off of what you were saying about reapproaching, I think it would be really interesting to a lot of students in the audience who are interested in like going into film writing or screenwriting. What would you guys say is like the typical life cycle of a work, and like how long do you spend on either an episode or a film from the beginning to the end? Like, could you give us a more detailed look of what that's like?
Well, for me, primarily I work in television. I've done a little bit of work in features, but most of the work I've done in features has been, you know, I've been hired to rewrite a script that somebody's making that I was not the original writer on. So what's, I can talk about television maybe a little more from experience, you know, and Jason could talk about the feature process, which I'm sure he's in the middle of 20 of them right now. But in TV, you often don't have a lot of time. If you're in a writer's room and you're working on a show that has 12 episodes and you're assigned to write episode 5, you may get 2 weeks in which you have other meetings to go off and come back with an outline of that episode. And then you may get a bunch of notes from your boss or the studio or network or your colleagues, you know, and then you have a week or even a few days to address those. And then, I don't know, two weeks maybe to write the first draft of the script. And then you're just honing it for usually just another handful of weeks until it gets shot. So it can be anywhere from 6 weeks to 3 months, I think, to write a television script. And what's great about television, I think, which is often not true of features, is that the end date is so quick. If you're working on a TV show that's up and running and you're writing an episode of it, often when you are assigned the episode, it also has an air date. You know, you're going to turn in a draft by this time, and this is when it airs. And so at a certain point, they're going to pull it out of your hands and just start shooting the thing, which is a wonderful thing because, you know, you can work on these things forever and somebody's always going to have notes and complaints. And also some of the things that may be working or not working in the scenes, you're going to get a better sense of when you actually are on a soundstage with actors. There's always a rehearsal. The writer in television is very often right there. And sometimes an actor will say, or a director will say, gee, this moment's a little bumpy, or is there a better line for this? Or we don't really need this couplet. They can communicate that by just looking at each other. So, you know, and then it goes in the editing room and you learn other things about it and you realize we didn't even need that scene, or we need a new scene that we never wrote. So, you know, a script, unlike, I don't know, there may be people on this call who want to be novelists or poets or journalists, but what's interesting about screenwriting is that the script is just a blueprint. It's not the house. And I think you want to treat it like a piece of literature when you're writing it, and you want it to be as great as it can be, and you want it to be a great experience for the reader. That's your first audience. But then once you move to the point where it's actually going to be filmed, you have to let go of that and realize it's not now about taking this piece of writing and dipping it in bronze. It's about making it a living, breathing thing and making the filmed episode or movie as good as it can be. And you need to let go. You know, there's a phrase we use a lot, which is kill your darlings. You know, sometimes if something isn't working, it's your favorite line that you might have to cut because you've been clinging to that line and trying to make everything around it work. And you just need to let it go. And when you do, sometimes everything opens up. So anyway, it's a long rambling way of saying it can be any length of time. In movies, Jason will speak to that. So I won't speak to that. Now we'll turn it over to Jason.
Thanks, Eli. No, I mean, that's a great example. I'll give you two examples. One, but there, I think there's a thousands of ways. So one example I give is that recently, about a year and a half ago, I read a script that I really liked by two writers, that they wrote it kind of by themselves. And through friends, I saw it, I really loved it. And then I was like, okay, well, it needs a rewrite. So I worked with them on a rewrite. And that took about, I would say, a good 3 to 4 months. But this was during the pandemic. And that's about, I would say, good for like your film, like rewrite, because you're meeting all the time, they're incorporating the notes, everyone has other things that they're working on. But I guess you asked earlier about what it's like to work kind of like, that's how I work here in this example in LA. You asked about working kind of across different continents. So when I worked in China, the first film I worked on was Fearless. And on that film, over, I would say, half a year, there was a writer's room. There were two main writers, but all these writers that came in and out. And over 6 months, they came up with something, but we knew that there were still issues with it. So because the something, like kind of the draft, was so good, we decided to go into production. But it was a little bit crazy, and it wouldn't work usually here in Hollywood that way, in that the first 2 weeks of the production, every day after we wrapped on set, we would work with the writers to rewrite the next day's scene. So there are some really crazy stories, but I think for the audience here and for you guys today, it's just to realize that you can figure out what the timeline might generally be wherever you are, because I think it works a little bit differently all around the world. But I think you kind of also approach it like you do like an assignment, like in school. You get a certain assignment and you have to ask questions. There are certain parameters and you have to finish it. So it's not necessarily rocket science. It's not things that you can't figure out. You can figure it out, and you just have to kind of get into it, ask the questions, and then take it piece by piece.
Yeah. By the way, I want to add to that, if you graduate from high school or college, and well, college probably, and your first thought is, I never have to do homework again. How great. I'm a writer or a producer. Don't do it. Lots of homework.
I was going to say the assignment thing hits a little close to home. I just for my ex-boss essay, but very cool. So I wanted to follow up on what you said, Jason, about like when you read the script and you were like, oh, this needs like a rewrite. Like what made you say that? And in your experience of like reading all these, you know, film submissions, what kind of distinguishes the successful ones from the non-successful ones? Like what are you looking for?
Yeah. So there are certain, I think, more things that are common, and then there's some things that are personal. So it depends, and you get experience as you go. So for me, it's like there has to be something about the characters usually that I really like, that really draws me in. It could be a way they've entered into that character's personality or how they express themselves. There's got to be something that hooks me. And then also about the writing. It depends. Sometimes the writing is clear and I can tell the story. Sometimes the writing is surprising. I don't know where it's going, but I'm following it. You know, Eli was talking about sometimes when you're too generic, sometimes when it's trying to cover a little bit of everything and it just meanders, then I'm like, oh, I don't know where this is going. And the writing doesn't seem to have a voice, like clarity. And then I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know if I want to continue, and I don't continue. So those are kind of some of the things that I'm looking for, like drawing me in. You mentioned like, how do I know, like, you know, if it needs to be rewritten or what is it? You'll just see, like, as I read through the script, you'll identify areas where you're like, huh, that wasn't as clear. Or, hey, maybe this could be stronger in this way. Or maybe there's just too much in here. And then you have to kind of cut it. Or maybe sometimes there's like, oh, that section or that character I really liked, but I wanted more. So there's all these various iterations. And it comes over time. So I think Eli also mentioned earlier about like reading more or writing more. Like it's always you're working on this craft.
Yeah, for sure. And Eli, like from the other side, from the writer's side, like when you're writing a script, is there anything you're always like trying to, I don't know, like accomplish? Or like what is your goal when you like start writing a script?
You know, the goal is always the same, I think. Which one of my heroes among television writers, David Chase, who created The Sopranos, which I still think is maybe the greatest TV show of all time, certainly one of the top five for me, he used to always say to his writers, always be entertaining. And I think Matt Weiner, who created the show Mad Men, I think I read that he had a little post-it on his desk, on his computer that said, always be entertaining. And there are a lot of ways to be entertaining. You can be funny, you can be really weird, you can be interesting. And I think sometimes really good writers throw it all at the audience at once. You're trying to be witty and clever. You're trying to have good dialogue. You're trying to be intriguing. You're trying to have big stakes, you know, to very early on hook the reader or the audience into something that they're going to really care about. So, you know, what I'm trying to accomplish, you know, often varies by story, but I think you want something that is cool and fun and has a vibe and a tone that feels like it isn't something someone else could write, something that gets to something real that you care about. They're often, I mean, I always hope that there's going to be at least a scene in something I write that I'm going to feel emotional when I write it. And if I don't feel emotional when I write it, how's anybody going to feel emotional when they see it? I mean, maybe they will because the actor will add something to it, but that's kind of a cop-out. So that's what I would say. And you know, just to give an example of what Jason is talking about, there's a lot of, you know, you're trying to do a lot of things in a script, right? Let's say any piece of writing. I'm trying to, you know, talk about an emotional experience. I'm trying to talk about a sibling rivalry. I'm trying to talk about my relationship with my dad. Whatever it is, the mechanics of the plot is sometimes just a delivery device for what it is you're trying to get across. And you small changes can sometimes have a big impact. I remember working on a script when I was on the TV show The West Wing, one of the earliest TV episodes I ever wrote. And it was a character trying to do something kind of in secret, and other people were finding out about it, and it was a problem. And it wasn't really working completely. And my boss at the time suggested just adding an investigative reporter character who, in I think 3 or 4 scenes in the whole script, was just figuring out what was going on and threatening to run it in the newspaper. And it was a very small thing, and it didn't require major changes to the script, but it gave it a kind of a pressure and an engine. And suddenly the character was in a lot more trouble than he had been in the previous version. And it was what my boss at the time called, you know, a change that is small in execution, but big in impact. So that's my way of saying sometimes the best feedback I get from people like Jason is just, it just needs to feel tenser. It just needs to have more drive. Let's brainstorm about ways that we can get under the skin of the characters more. You know, and those can be incredibly valuable notes, because you might have those ideas in your head. You might feel all the tension in your head, but sometimes what's in your head isn't making it onto the page.
Yeah, for sure. That's really interesting to like think about the tension and stuff like that. I know you said like the goal is always to be entertaining. I kind of wanted to switch and talk about your experience writing speeches for Vice President Al Gore and others. Would you say like the goal there is also to be entertaining? Like, does that help with the efficacy of the speech, or maybe like what's different when you're writing speeches from when you're writing TV?
I don't think every speech writer would say this, but yes, I think the goal is always to be entertaining within reason. Because Donald Trump was always entertaining, and you know, I'm not trying to, you know, denigrate anyone's politics on this call, but I think, you know, in his case, entertaining often deviated from responsible discourse and, you know, fact and truth. But, you know, when I was writing speeches, I found that, you know, most political speeches I saw and heard, and I was seeing and hearing a ton of them, were very dreary. They were often, if a senator was giving a speech on healthcare reform, their healthcare policy advisor wrote the speech usually, and they didn't have a sense of oratory about them. They didn't have a sense of punchiness and fun and feistiness about them. And so I think the best speeches, you know, it's also true that Washington, D.C., like any company town, Hollywood sometimes included, it's a bit of an echo chamber. Washington more so, because if they're, you know, if Biden's trying to pass his stimulus bill, they do a bunch of polling, and well, these are the 7 words we can use to describe it that are safe and that people are going to like, and these are the 10 words we should never use. And so everyone speaks in the same way, and you start to tune it out. So I think some of the better political speeches that I've written actually were after I left politics and came to Hollywood, because I had more of an appreciation for freshness of language, and that you need to say things different ways. You need to avoid cliches like the plague. You need to grab people by the lapels, and then they'll hear your argument. So I think entertainment, unfortunately, is a big component of political speech making. You know, I say unfortunately because, you know, this, everybody should have the intellectual patience to sit through a 2-hour seminar on important issues of the day, but nobody really does. So, you know, yeah. That's what I would say about that.
And then maybe like in addition to the entertainment factor, do you have advice on just like maybe the more argumentative or like, I don't know, persuasive side of it? Because a lot of the students who are watching now are entering the argumentative section of the competition, which is more like trying to argue for a case or something like that.
I guess what I would say is be confident. Don't feel you need to press your point too hard, be clear, be punchy. And you know, the best advice I ever got, I think, about writing a speech from some political consultant when I was living in Washington, D.C., was what you really want to do in a speech is you want to tell people what you're about to say, then you want to say it, then you want to tell them you said it. So, you know, just break it down for people, and don't be afraid to make an argument the way you would over a dinner table. You know, don't be afraid to put it in. I don't want to say, you know, you don't have to be too formal. You know, an argument doesn't have to be the Oxford Union. You can be punchy. You can use contemporary references. You know, all you're trying to do is to win somebody over to kind of let them into your point of view, you know? So I guess that's the most important thing. I mean, there's so much I could say about it, but, you know, be punchy, be clear. Don't be afraid to set up and sum up in addition to making your argument. And, you know, don't use too many 9-syllable words.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. So maybe I'll ask a couple more questions and then we'll start diving into the Q&A because I know lots of people have questions they want to ask as well. Maybe a more general question would be, I know we've talked a lot about like the craft or the production or like writing. Do you guys have more maybe like practical tips for people who are trying to get started in like the TV like industry? Like how do you kind of crack into that?
Should I, Jason, do you want to talk about it? Because that probably means movies too.
Sure. Happy to. I think there are really a lot of different ways. And I think it's always changing. So it depends on what you want to do. I would say if you film, especially, I would say, and maybe television and like Hollywood films, like ones that you'll see like the big studios do, it's really centered around like LA. Maybe sometimes like New York, other places, but it's really centered around LA. So if that's what you want to do, then it's kind of like to get started, you have to figure out your way. And nowadays, because things are a little bit more virtual and maybe that'll stay a little bit that way, you can reach out to these companies. Because nowadays with whatever is your favorite film or favorite TV show, you can look at the credits and you can start researching people's names and their backgrounds and what they do. And like, you know, I think this competition is also a kind of a nice way because you get to learn about this process because you can bet in screenwriting, there are also screenwriting competitions. And when you submit your scripts and people read them, that's kind of a competition too, because I have like stacks of scripts and I got to figure out, okay, I'm looking for kind of a action comedy out of all these ones, which one do I like? And it really depends. So I guess my advice is you have to figure out what you want to do, but it starts with doing the craft a little bit, like what you're doing here, and then also networking a little bit. So attending and hearing people talk of seminars like this, reaching out to folks, applying to internships and interning somewhere, and just starting to, you know, do the craft.
I guess what I would add to that, especially from the TV side, well, but it's probably true of both. You know, LA, I think, is, as Jason says, kind of critical, certainly for most people starting out, because this is where, even though things are shot all over the world now, most of American entertainment is written and produced out of LA. But the thing I would say is that, and this may be changing a bit, but I feel like it's rare for a writer to have something to say that is really going to get people's attention before the age of 30. I don't know if Jason has had a different experience, but in TV writers' rooms, sometimes there are extraordinary writers in their 20s. But usually, even people who get jobs on TV shows in their 20s, it's not until they get a little bit older that their scripts start to really rise to this level of the senior writers. And I think it's simply a question of experience and wisdom, because you can be an amazing writer of dialogue or scenes and or sentences and still not have the depth in your own head to really have something to say. I was, you know, in my early 30s when I started doing this kind of work, and I definitely wouldn't have had anything interesting to say in my 20s. So I think, you know, if you want to do this, if you want to break into Hollywood, come to LA. A lot of people get assisting jobs. That's always a good way in because you get to meet people. You get to meet people like Jason. You get to connect with the people who later will have to hire you and believe in you. I always say read as many great scripts as possible. And that's different than watching shows or movies, because when you read the script, you understand what you then must produce. You understand what the stage directions have to look like, how it flows, how the dialogue looks. I think it's much easier to do it yourself when you've done a lot of that on paper, really read and familiarize yourself with what these documents are like, how they live and breathe, and then just live your life, you know, make connections, you know, try to get work in Hollywood. But the more interesting experience you have, the more heartbreaks you have, the more weird job experiences you have, the more you know, adventures you have in your life, that's stuff that will just fuel your writing. Even if it's one half of one scene that has an emotional moment from something that happened to you that has no place in a spy thriller or whatever it is you're writing, your life will find its way onto the page. So don't neglect your life for the career.
That's really good advice. Another two questions I see in the Q&A that are a little similar. Someone said, or someone asked, how can you keep your stories original if many of the possible directions a story can follow have already been written? And then someone else said, what do you do when you have a creative block?
Originality point, I would say this. For me, when I look at stories, or I think about the ones that I want to do, right now I'm looking at kind of stuff that is familiar, yet fresh. And so when I say that, I mean, like, for example, one of the feature films that I'm working on right now, it's a coming of age love story. But I guess the difference is that I've never seen it from this cultural lens and this family dynamic and these two people. But there's a lot of it that's familiar in a Romeo and Juliet type of way. But in it, the voice and the characters are something a little bit different. It's like a slightly different flavor of a similar meal. So I would say that is one way to be original, but then there's like a lot of other ways to do it. Like, for example, yeah. So I think it quite depends. Or if you look at, you know, for example, Pixar films, I would say of lately, like a lot of them are quite different. There are different cultures, different characters, and very global. But there's something familiar about that Disney type of storytelling, right? So I think that's the combination. But also, some people like to write totally different, odd things. And that's totally amazing too. Because nowadays with the internet, you can put it on Wattpad, or you can find some niche comic book distributor, or it could become huge, you know? Who thought Guardians of the Galaxy would be this big global blockbuster? So write what you love, find a way to tell it that shines your personality.
Yeah, that's, I think, great advice. And, you know, I don't know if how many people, probably very few people on this, you know, Zoom will know the director Robert Altman, but he was a very big and acclaimed director in the 1970s, basically. And he did movies that if you look at them, many people find a lot of them kind of boring. They don't really have plot. They're just people drifting around and you experience their lives. And he always said he wasn't really interested in telling stories because the way he put it, there only are six stories. You know, it was his way of saying, and I'm not saying I completely agree with this, but that, you know, okay, boy meets girl, coming of age, there's really only a few stories. That might be true. And sometimes, you know, in things I'm writing, I'm just trying to do versions of those sort of same things that have been done better by the great novelists and screenwriters. And, you know, why do I bother? But the reason I bother is exactly what Jason says, because I'm delivering that sort of time-worn story with things from my life and things from my experience and a layer of meaning that hopefully is different. And one of the great things about the fact that Hollywood, I believe, is now really eager for the first time in the full range of cultural experience, you know, telling trans stories, telling Asian American or simply Asian stories in a way that it didn't 5 years ago, is that I can watch a love story, you know, just scrolling through Netflix, and it's something I've never seen because I'm brought into a whole new world and point of view. So don't be afraid to make it fully about yourself, wherever you come from, whatever your quirks and habits are, whatever your odd hobbies are. Put that in a script, you know, give it to the character, you know, make sure the story still works, but don't be afraid. Don't hold back. Don't make the characters generic. Make them as three-dimensional as you are.
Yeah. Well, your last point actually ties really nicely into the next question I was going to ask. Maybe a little more somber, but Joelson, I don't know if I pronounced that right, asked in the Q&A, the Asian American community is currently experiencing heightened incidences of racially motivated social injustice. You know, what role do you think representation in the creative sphere has, especially in TV and film, to addressing that? And, you know, in general, for Jason and Eli, you know, what do you think the power of writing is?
I think, yeah, it's a terrible moment that we're going through, but it's not unique. If you look back in history, whether it's to Asians now or past or to other underrepresented groups, this happened. And so the importance of telling our story is more important than ever. having our voice, building those connections, getting to people to understand our emotions, our range of good and bad, right? Expressing yourself, letting people know who you are and what you like, what you don't like, everything. Like, stories are really people. And so I think the great thing about the moment that we have now with technology is that you can also find a way to record and make and write and distribute your stories in whatever way. It could be something through this competition, could be on TikTok, could be on YouTube. But if you have an idea or if you have a thought, write it down or record it and share it with the world. And just keep doing that. And if it's a different, it's a different idea, the stories have the power to change narratives. So I was also glad that, you know, at the top of this, you showed, like, you know, this was a very global audience. So a global audience, and how can we all connect with each other? We're kind of doing this a little bit now, but there needs to be more of it and more continuation of it instead of just one dominant narrative. Because if there's just one dominant narrative, that's where we get into some of these issues. So the moment we have now with technology and, you know, the youth, especially young people being motivated in competitions like this, you know, that's why, for example, when Chelsea, when you guys reached out to me, I was like, yeah, this is the audience. This is so important to be reaching out to the youth and encouraging you all to be writing your stories and sharing them with the world.
Yeah, I'll just add to that I think even though it's entertainment, right? And it's not as important as public policy. And, you know, I would never pretend that anything I write in a script of any kind, you know, can measure up to laws and enforcement of those laws and the things that the real adults do in our society, you know? Being able to see the full, you know, diversity of who we are in the world, you know, as leading characters, as good people and bad people and love interests and, you know, simply having incredible movies like The Farewell or Crazy Rich Asians, you know, I think it makes it harder to demonize people who don't look like us because we're brought into at least representations of their lives. And we realize that we're all the same. And we all ultimately, the fact that there are just six stories, we're all living them, whatever cultures we're from, in different ways. So I think, you know, more entertainment that is fully diverse or from a very specific cultural vantage point makes us learn incredibly cool, unique things about those cultures, but also see everybody falls in love and everybody wants to live a decent life and be successful. And everybody's got, you know, a pushy grandmother, whatever it is, it just brings us closer together. So I think the trend we've seen in Hollywood is a great one. I hope it kind of amplifies. It's long overdue. There used to be such awful stereotypes in all movies and TV. And I think that's coming to an end and should.
Yeah. Well, on that amazing, really important note, it is almost 7 and I promised to have you guys out of here, you know, roughly at 7. So thank you guys so much for coming and talking. It was really so interesting to hear. You know, I personally learned a lot and I'm sure it was really helpful for the hundreds of people in the audience now and also everyone who will watch the recording later on. So just as a reminder to the competitors, the submissions are due March 28th at midnight. Be sure you turn those in to the link that you received in your email so that your writing can be considered. But also be sure to tune in to the creative writing workshop that we have in 2 hours, especially if you're working on your creative writing essay, that would be really helpful. So I thought as kind of a last signing off question, it might be nice if you guys could each share maybe like the best piece of advice you've ever gotten, either about writing or entertainment or just life.
I would say keep at it, persistence. So you have to have passion. That's one thing in what you're writing and what you're doing. So find your passion and then don't give up on that passion. Because that's what someone told me when I first entered the industry, because she said, you know, she was looking at back at, you know, her class of, you know, that she started with in this industry. And she was like, a lot of people do something else. And that's cool too, you know, but if you really want to do this, understand it's not overnight. It could be, but usually it's not, because if you look at just the people that are shooting stars, that may not be the average, but you really have to work at it. So, you know, it may sound glamorous or whatnot, But it's really, you have to put in the work day in and day out. But if you do that, it's a wild ride and it's fun and amazing things can happen.
I totally agree with Jason. I'm gonna piggyback on that and then add one thing. And piggybacking on what Jason said, this is true of any career, not just a Hollywood career, but you can't have a successful career without a lot of failure. And it's especially true in Hollywood because, you're gonna have scripts rejected. You're gonna have things you care deeply about that other people are gonna kind of throw in the garbage. You're gonna have things on the air or in movie theaters and someone's gonna write a lousy review of it. So you need to find a way, if you want a real career doing this kind of work, to protect yourself psychologically and rebound from failure. It's very hard to do. I mean, this is not coal mining and it's not, a lot of things that are much, much harder and give you a much more challenging life, but it's psychologically hard because you are given a blank screen and you have to fill it with yourself and be funny and be smart and be clever and tell the exposition in the right way. And it often feels like you're being judged when you get feedback or when you get reviews. And so do what you need to protect your head. Have a good family life. Be with your friends and laugh with your friends. Build a community of other writers who can share rejection stories and laugh at them because you're gonna have them. And how fast you're able to dust yourself off and move on to the next thing is going to determine if you can really have a career. And I think the other piece, that's really just repeating what Jason said, and I think he's totally right. But then to add to that, I'm going to give something completely contradictory, which is be vulnerable. Because unfortunately, as much as you have to build a shell to protect yourself, the good stuff comes from opening up and telling real hard truths about yourself in a writer's room, in a story that someone else may use in a script, in a script that you write, in a meeting with a producer when they're saying, I don't really understand this character, what's their point of view, and who, and you finally have to say, okay, it's me, and here's why this family illness was really hard. Don't, be unafraid, be vulnerable, and then be as strong and protected as possible at the same time.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. Thank you both again for coming and speaking, and thanks everyone else for coming to listen. Again, come show up to the creative writing workshop in 2 hours. And other than that, have a great day, everyone. Eli and Jason, you can hang around to look at how many people are thanking you in the chat and then feel free to hop off whenever.
Great. Thank you all. Thanks, Chelsea.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Eli.